This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Cloud Foundry, and today I'm talking with the IBM team who've been introducing blockchain in Cloud Foundry.
I am Nima Caviani.
Hi, I'm Swetha Ripakula.
My name is Morgan Bauer.
One of the challenges we have, guys, is when we think about blockchain, we think about something that's complicated. We don't see a lot of tools yet for people to actually build their own blockchains out there. Yet today you've rocked up to an open source conference and you've simply just said, we'll just take this service out the back and we'll stick blockchain in, and it's a done deal for developers. Do you want to explain a bit more about what you've done, how you got there, and how this works?
The way we did it was that we decided that a lot of the developers of blockchain technologies, they have a hard time understanding how to bring up a blockchain node, how to deploy a smart contract, how to deploy their application to the smart contract. And we saw that the same paradigm that applies to 12-factor web applications, and the way platforms like Cloud Foundry have tried to solve this for 12-factor web applications, same paradigms can be applied to blockchain type of applications too. And we can hide a lot of that complexity from the end developers, who essentially all they care about is basically having a web application that is somehow using blockchain behind the scene. We basically looked into it and decided to think how we can simplify it. And we realized that a lot of the process of creating a blockchain node, deploying a smart contract, and then exposing that information to the end application that the developers write can be automated. And that's basically what we did as part of the open source tool.
It's really taking advantage of what we've said since the 90s, isn't it? Just assume things are there. So in the 90s, we got to the point of just assuming the network was there. And then in the 2000s, it was just assumed that the mobile network is there. And then it was just assumed cloud is there. So you're really just extending that paradigm for the developer. Instead of writing something different, just assume it's there and we'll make it simple. So what were the challenges that you came across while setting this up?
There are a few challenges. A lot of the blockchain nodes, it's a decentralized concept. And then cloud is kind of trying to say we have these centers and we're going to bring all these things and it's centralized. So those two concepts don't exactly go with each other. And that's one of the things that we had to think about. How are we doing this without losing the decentralized part of blockchain? That individualized node concept, we're like, how do we make sure each person really feels like they're still getting their own piece? We're not losing anything. We're not letting data out. And those are things that we were thinking about. Thankfully, some of us have been playing with some of the blockchain, like the Ethereum tools, and we were like, okay, it's really funny. This thing looks very similar to XYZ, and usually it was like a parallel. This application doesn't look that different from that application. Really, the hard part was this smart contract thing, and then there's this node thing, and how do I deploy this? How does someone choose a smart contract? And that's what started our conversation, and we started bouncing ideas. Well, what about if we deployed the node? And let's just assume the same thing you were saying. Let's just assume that you have an account. We went from there. Okay, let's assume we got all this and we got to the end. Okay, this is the experience we want. And then we went backwards one by one. The next thing we need is a contract address. Well, that's really easy. We could just download one. You started solving. I think the hardest thing was the account. How do you have an individual account? We're still trying to figure out ways to make the process. Currently, we have one way to do it. It's not very flexible in the sense you can't bring your account to the service. But we were like, well, let's start off with this, where we create one for you. It's that same process. What can we make an assumption for, and what do we have to deliver right now?
If we think about blockchain within the cryptocurrency world, we look at this from the perspective of wallets. When we look at it from the permission blockchain, to some degree, it could be treated with the same approach. So why couldn't you just plug that in as another service?
Permission blockchains, there's a nuance to it. Because it's permissioned, you can't just assume that everyone has access to it. So as a user, I can say, yes, I want to go onto a Fabric network, or there's quite a few, I want to go to Sawtooth or any of them. But the thing is, it's very individualized. There's not one. Our service, we have to make some decisions now. Do we let the user bring their thing to the service, or do we assume that the service has already made some kind of a deal, or the broker has made some kind of connection with a specific deployment of the blockchain network? And those are things that we're still discussing and trying to figure out what's the right approach. Even if we do that, creating user accounts is very different on some of the other platforms. In Ethereum, it's simple. You bring your own keys to the network. I just create a public-private key and it's done. Hyperledger Fabric, the way it works is your key has to be signed by someone who's in the network and is allowed to, and then it becomes a slightly manual step there. We have to play the role and figure out how are we making sure we don't take away the security and the privacy, because that's the benefits of blockchain. That's why going into the permission network is not as simple as just pulling up a new thing. The software might be easy, but it's the other pieces that we're still working the kinks out of.
One of the challenges here, though, is interoperability. not just between Ethereum and Hyperledger and some of the other projects that are coming around, but also interledger interoperability. We've got a lot of permission blockchains up there. And one of the focuses that Charles Brett, one of my colleagues, has had on Enterprise Times has been, how do we actually allow people to move elements between chains? Because effectively that's going to happen. People do not want humongous change, but they will need to be passed from one chain to the next. If people are bringing their identification to you, does that make it easier for you to then talk to the multiple blockchain instances out there?
A little bit. The interoperability has a few different aspects to it. One of them is, how do you connect the two ledgers? How does the user certificates that they're bringing, how do they work with both? The two that I know a little more is Ethereum and Fabric. The certificate algorithms that they use are completely different. I cannot take an Ethereum certificate into a default Fabric deployment. Saying that, Fabric does allow a little bit of some flexibility where you can change the algorithm and do all of that, but extra work is needed. There's different pieces, and unfortunately, I don't think it's something one person or we could just do and say, oh, we figured out the interoperability, you give us the credentials and we'll let you talk to any of these blockchain networks. You do need some kind of collaboration between the different blockchain technologies. And there are some really cool projects that are coming up. There is an interledger protocol that they're trying to come out with that's helping. So if you have smart contracts on both of them and they need to be able to interact, they have ways to make sure you can submit it. And unless they are through consensus or added to the ledger on both sides, the transaction doesn't get created. So there are very cool things. There's interoperability in terms of applications. In the Hyperledger world, we're trying to bring in Ethereum concepts and Ethereum tools in, so that way one developer can really just pick and choose. They can say, well, this application, I can put Fabric in the back, I can put Ethereum in the back, Sawtooth, Burrow, whatever you choose. And so there are different levels to it. I'm not sure exactly which one of those we want to attack quite yet, but the user account, I'm not quite sure how that's going to be solved, because that needs collaboration from each of the networks to say, we will support this. And maybe there is a room for a standard to come out or a spec to come out there.
IBM's been very locked in with Hyperledger. It's done all of its work initially through Hyperledger. How does this now work as you start to expand out into Ethereum and into other blockchain projects?
I will say that IBM definitely contributes quite a bit to Hyperledger, and we are putting a lot of effort and work into it. But if you look at some of the use cases that we have, not all of the solutions are on Hyperledger. And that's the common theme, is you pick the network that fits your cause. If Ethereum is the right way in some certain use cases, maybe that's the way to go. We also want to work, and we want to add, we don't want to vendor lock in anyone. So that's also one of the things. We want to be inclusive. We want to make sure people get choice at this network level too. Just because we contribute a lot to Hyperledger Fabric, that doesn't mean everybody wants that.
One thing that I wanted to add is that at the end of the day, these blockchain networks are mostly about community. And the bigger of a community you get, the better your blockchain network works, especially for public blockchains, where the trust that you build into the network really depends on the number of nodes that you have in the network. So one thing that bringing Ethereum and EVM into Hyperledger helps with is that you can tie back into that community and basically benefit from the set of efforts that they're putting into debugging their contracts, making sure that there's no weird overflow situations with the contracts. Basically, you get that community effort and you make it available in a more enterprise, more controlled environment too, so that while the community effort is actually being pushed to create the trust, the enterprise can also benefit from it.
I like the fact that you've gone after multiple blockchain projects and not just one. So if that came across differently just now, I apologize for that. I also like the fact that you've come here to Cloud Foundry. One of the challenges is going to be, how do you make this as a service that will run on other people's distros? Because it's one thing to have it on your distro and you showed it running off of the Enterprise Edition. But of course, IBM has multiple versions of Cloud Foundry on its own. We know that there are a lot of other people out there with their distributions, many of them, again, with subversions of their distributions. The idea of portability and making this easy for everybody is critical here. How's that going to work?
That's where the Open Service Broker API comes in that when you said earlier it was running on CFEE, where the deployment is somewhere else, and it's attachable into Cloud Foundry through the Service Broker API. There are many other platforms that you can do that attaching with. One of them is Cloud Foundry, of course. I was part of the Kubernetes Service Catalog, which provides the platform side of the Service Broker API. I know SAP and Swisscom both have their own platforms that do that attaching. Then in the background, the providing the broker side of the API, the platform talks to the broker, The broker earlier was running on a Bosch deployment, which is a VM-based deployment. Not only do we have the Bosch deployment, we also have a Kubernetes deployment where you can run the broker in a Kubernetes environment. The broker runs, and then it creates the individual blockchain nodes as pods and exposes them both internally to the Kubernetes network, because there's an internal Kubernetes network, but we expose them externally as well. They're publicly attachable. You get a DNS entry, you get an IP address, you can attach your standard Ethereum clients.
We've seen Arini announced here today, and IBM, of course, is very into that, and the whole goal of Arini is to make it easier to push into Kubernetes. Is that going to be part of what you expect people to do, or when you talk about Kubernetes, are you looking to push directly into Kubernetes?
Arini is just running the CF pieces in Kubernetes. The broker itself is just a completely separate thing. It can run anywhere. The Bosch release, VMs, Kubernetes, pods, there isn't really a different correspondence there.
Basically, what the broker does, the broker exposes a bunch of REST APIs and endpoints. And what the broker is deployed on is totally hidden from the end users of the blockchain network. If you're a user of blockchain network and you're targeting those endpoints that are exposed by the broker, that would enable you to deploy your blockchain nodes, you can choose what type of blockchain node you want to be created for, or basically the nodes that we create, you can choose the type of the blockchain network that these nodes need to be a part of. Where these nodes run is something that the broker decides about. Kubernetes, in that sense, is one of the backends where the nodes for the blockchain network can run. And the end users of the blockchain network, they don't need to know this. It's just that it's a managed environment for them, or a managed node for them, that can potentially expand in size if the size of the ledger, for example, grows to something that is beyond the current capabilities of the current node. So in the sense, deploying these nodes on Kubernetes and Cloud Foundry give us that flexibility in terms of expanding the size of the nodes. But from the perspective of the blockchain developers, they can just assume that the network is there.
You've raised that challenge of scale up there straight away, and that's something we've got to be careful of. Blockchain, on a cryptocurrency perspective, has a really bad reputation for scale up, and that's because of the way it was designed. The attempts to fix that haven't gone terribly well, but what we have seen on the permission side is some incredibly high transactional rates, almost matching the non-blockchain transactional rates. We've got credit card companies and others involved, and they have some very strict requirements here. But when we start to now talk about running the broker in Kubernetes and in everything else, connecting all this through, do you see there being a challenge of matching up the scale ability of both sides? How many brokers will we need to deploy? How much traffic will we need from the broker to the back end? Where will all of this sit together? That sounds like a significant architectural challenge to me.
This is a very interesting question. The part that the broker does is really just brokering the nodes, which is different from how the nodes get involved in the transactions that happen to the blockchain. Essentially, what you require the broker to do is give me an Ethereum node or give me a Hyperledger entry point. And from that point on, once you're given the node with the address where you can access the node, you are going to be directly talking to the blockchain network, and the broker is not going to play any role communicating with the blockchain network. The scalability of the broker is completely orthogonal to the scalability of the blockchain network that is trying to provision for you in that sense. It doesn't mean that you don't need to scale the broker, but certainly the level of scalability that you require from the broker is not at the level that you would expect from the blockchain networks, because it doesn't have to respond to as many number of transactions or requests that the blockchain network is required to.
You've got to hand off to another application that somebody will drop into to pick their contract clauses, bring them together and validate. How much work have you done on that smart contract side? And have you built another application or just create another service that you can plug in to deal with that challenge?
The smart contracts, there's various challenges. I think you've highlighted a few of them. One of them is, how do you write them properly? And I don't think BlockKit necessarily solves that issue, as you mentioned. One of the things we did as a side thing, and we haven't quite gotten to working on it after the hackathon, was having a contract marketplace. That's just really a place to have some sample options. Whoever deploys the broker really gets an option. What do they want to put in there? That still means somebody has to write the contract. Somebody still has to vet them. And there are practices that are coming up. One that we are considering and using is the mortal clause. basically you can have a transaction on your contract that you would hit it, and it basically voids and nulls the smart contract, so you can never run anything else in there. And you have to be careful there, especially when you're working with these Ethereum networks. You can accidentally leave money in a contract that you can never use again. If you're paying attention to the cryptocurrency thing, that could be a lot of money or very little, depending on when you look at it. These are all scary little things. We don't quite have a solution for that, but we do want to pay attention to some of the models that are coming out. One of them is the Mortal Clause. We want to have accessibility in our service when you unbind. Well, we want to be able to call that and say, we're going to call that on your smart contract that you originally deployed. It's smart options, some of those things. But it also depends, again, by network. What smart contracts are there? Ethereum is going in Solidity and Viper, and these are all EVM-based things. There's some talk about them trying to adopt WebAssembly. Fabric does Go, Node, and we just started supporting its Solidity contracts. Sawtooth does WebAssembly, they do Node, and they've also do its Solidity. So you can see that there's many different contracts. What I've seen is an emergence of a different group of people who write these contracts. And they have some kind of legal background as well, because they want to use these for business transactions and stuff. So you need somebody like that, and you need someone who can write the code. These networks have to design, and it's like a new set of languages all of a sudden popping up again, because we don't quite know what that class of contract writers need yet.
When somebody's working on their node, they're calling it, and then they try and call a smart contract, I presume you'll just present them with a set of options based on the node that they've called, given that not all the smart contract options run across all the various fabrics.
That would be the next step. Right now, we are supporting solely Solidity. Once we move, the next network that we want to look into is Fabric. Fabric, we do have options. Currently, the one that's probably most heavily used is Go. Node is probably coming up there because that was a recent addition in there. We have to start looking. There is a place to put parameters and things like that. How much can we detect? We have to look into that just from the code that you're saying. Do we want to be looking into your code? There are quite a bit of things that we have to think about in that. But yes, in the end, we have to have some kind of a filter or an option saying, hey, do you want to deploy a Go? Do you want to deploy a Node one? How do we disseminate that information? So there are those kind of questions.
I think what excites me from listening to you all is I'm looking at blockchain at the moment and I see a big enterprise solution, but I see much more interest from small companies who don't know where to start. They don't have the tools, they don't have a start point. And what you're throwing here is something where they can just go and play and do this. Thank you all very much for talking to me today.
I can't say a timeline. We're very much in an experimental stage. We're testing things out. We're trying to see where can we take this? What are the possibilities? What networks do we want to support? There are a lot of questions that I just raised in this thing about what we're discussing and we're trying to choose. And there's so much there. We need to explore a little bit more before we say this is what Blockhead is and this is what we're going to do. And I think we want to take our time before we make those decisions.
One thing that I wanted to add regarding the contract marketplace that Sweta mentioned, I think this is where I see a lot of potentials for how smart contracts are going to evolve, in the sense that developing smart contracts could be something that is completely community driven. And one of the things that some of the companies out there have started to do is creating a repository for the contracts. But in combination with something like the Blockhead broker that we developed, I think one thing that is possible is that you can allow users of blockchain to directly deploy their contracts from a marketplace into a blockchain network by the press of a button. Because if the Blockhead broker or any broker is capable of launching you a node, giving you an account address, and providing all that information, all you need to do is to basically choose your contract that you want to deploy, and then it'll take care of that part of it for you as well. Then comes the concept of how would you chain these contracts, which becomes the next very interesting thing to consider. If you have a repository where you have a list of different contracts, and if there is a way to compose these contracts in order for you to create something bigger out of these building block contracts that you have, then you can go towards models where you can create a much more complex scenario, and all of this done through choosing the right set of contracts as the building blocks for the application that you want to deploy, and then pressing a button, and then the broker putting all of them together and then deploying them on a node for you.
I think what excites me from listening to you all is I'm looking at blockchain at the moment and I see a big enterprise solution. But I see much more interest from small companies who don't know where to start. They don't have the tools, they don't have a start point. And what you're throwing here is something where they can just go and play and do this. Thank you all very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.